Right now, if you've ever shopped for clothes at stores like H&M, Topshop, Forever 21, even Target, you've probably been a consumer of what's called fast fashion. That's clothing that takes the latest fashion trends and gets them on store shelves cheaply and quickly. But our next guest says that fast fashion comes with a lot of downsides for the environment, for workers, and for consumers. She makes the case for slow fashion and more sustainable clothing. Vanessa Andrew is a Milwaukee artist, community educator, and expert at reusing old materials to make something new. She designs and creates clothing and textiles and has her own brand, Madame Chino, which she started in 2003. Vanessa, welcome to Central Time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off with this idea of fast fashion. It's a phrase I've heard, but I don't know what it means. Could you just give us a 101 when we say the words fast fashion? What is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So fast fashion is made quick, and it's consumed quick, and it's thrown away. It's not durable, so it doesn't last very long. It's made by forced or underpaid workers in poor working conditions, and there are huge environmental impacts both in conception, production, and disposal.
Yeah, let's dig into a couple of those points before we move on to the sustainable side of things. First of all, the environmental concerns. This is something that has people worried about, I guess, the chain from how it's made to how it's disposed of.
Absolutely, and I think that was my first concern and what brought my interest to this field. I mean, there's tons of water use from the crops to washing, creating the fibers and, you know, dyeing this fabric. You've got the fossil fuels and all the pollution involved in, you know, the production and the transportation. A lot of times one garment has multiple facets to it that have to be transported and then brought to the store. And then once you're disposing of it, it goes somewhere else, which is more transportation. A lot of the countries that are producing this stuff have lower environmental standards. So those pollution is going directly into the environment unchecked. And then you think about the waste that we're creating. I have some statistics on the Goodwill. One just right on the north side of Milwaukee, they're receiving 160 donations a day, both large and small. I was shocked to discover they are able to process 800 boxes, 5 by 5 by 5 foot. They're actually getting rid of those boxes every month, and that stuff crushes down to about 6 to 8 bales a day, which each bale is 5 of those 5 by 5 foot boxes in one, and they're worth $50, and they weigh about a ton, and that our local southwestern Wisconsin hub is receiving 200 of those bales a day from our region.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and a lot of this stuff is ending up in other countries, and I think we're really thinking, oh, this is charity, like it's going to a good place, but they're trying to create this ban in East Africa on this stuff because it actually is inhibiting their countries from setting up their own manufacturing. So even the waste part of it, not just that it's going in the garbage, but that it, you know, it's not always going to the needy, and that the needy are, you know, they want to start their own production as well. So that's just kind of eye-opening.
And briefly, before we move on to sustainable fashion, you mentioned concerns about the labor. And I think people have heard maybe vaguely about unsafe working conditions, child labor. What kind of things do we see in the creation of these clothes when it comes to labor?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the biggest shock is the child labor aspect of it, which is obviously fueled by poverty. Children are being trafficked from their families and told that their children will be schooled and work and send money back to the family. And what happens is the families never see their children again. Some of the statistics are there's 210 million children in forced labor around the world today, and not just in clothing, but in our home goods and chocolate and coffee, our cell phones and all types of technology, mining, dangerous jobs. And just to put that in perspective, last I checked, there's about 250 million people in the United States. So if you can kind of get a grip on what that means, it would be about 4/5 of our population of people doing this slave labor, and nobody really knows about it. So that's definitely an issue. And then, in fact, those child labor jobs are stealing these minimum wage jobs from adults. So it's additionally fueling more poverty there.
Now let's talk about the reaction. Now you and a lot of other people are trying to come up with sustainable alternatives for clothing. Can you give us a taste for the range of things people are trying to do?
Yeah. So I think to do sustainable clothing, I think the first thing is you're voting with your dollar there. And one way would be to abstain. You just only buy what you can use or use what you already have. Hold a swap with your neighbors or your friends, and then repair the items that you've already got to alter and fit better. I think everybody could probably go through their closet and grab a bag full of stuff that they could fix. Another one would be to thrift. Now, you know, this whole fast fashion model is based on impulse shopping, and I think that is why we have thrift stores. So again, thrifting is great, but it also doesn't really change that model of purchasing for us. I would say if you were to get rid of stuff or you were to buy stuff, it's better to do it at faith-based organizations. Usually the administrative salaries are less, and more of that money is actually going right back into local economies. For example, St. Vincent de Paul, Salvation Army, Purple Heart. And I guess another way would be to make things. You still can buy patterns and either have somebody else make it or make it yourself. And if you are planning to shop new, there's a ton of resources online on how to shop ethical, fair trade, recycled, organic, local, independent owned, you know, even just a local boutique rather than a big chain. And the power of the internet is huge. There's a ton of sustainable fashion directories out there. You can follow the brands on Instagram. It's really about seeking out these brands because independent labels have less of a way to get right in your face. And so they really rely on people who have that interest to come and find them.
And Vanessa, I'll level with you. I'm probably never going to make my own clothing, and the world will be thankful for that. It wouldn't be pretty. So if as a consumer I wanted to start to try, I would worry, oh, is this going to be expensive? Is it going to be weird stuff? What would be, for somebody who's not, somebody like me who's never done this before, what would be a good starting point to try to find new sustainable clothing?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a big barrier in the sustainable fashion world is that people think, oh, it's expensive. Oh, it's wonky. It's handmade. It's not sexy. You know, it's tree hugger styles or whatever. I think the best way to get around all that is to just, you know, get in touch with people who are doing something similar like that. First of all, I guess I should say the things that people are thinking, oh, it's so expensive. But in the reality of it, if you spend maybe a little more on something that's going to last longer, you know, already your dollar is going further. And I think that's one of the biggest barriers for people is that there's some research on sustainable marketing, and essentially nobody wants to spend more money on sustainable clothing. They just don't. So that's kind of one thing that is difficult for marketing to those people. But if you think about it, right, like it's going to go further. You know, what happened with my business is that it is made to order. So it's essentially a hypothetical business unless somebody were to order something. And as soon as I got to a ground level store, I found that people are just begging me to help them with their alterations, and they want custom stuff and they're willing to pay for it, which is pretty amazing. But again, I think getting things altered secondhand, because people can buy secondhand and then they bring it into me and say, hey, I want these sleeves shortened or the shoulders, you know, width taken in and stuff like that. That's a great way for anybody to make something fit them, and they love the fabric. They know the fabric's going to last. They love it. They want to change it to make it fit, and then they feel good in it. So that's really rewarding.
And I want to talk a little bit more about what you do at Madame Chino, Vanessa. You, as I understand it, your main gig here is taking T-shirts, right? Old T-shirts, and turning them into something new. Talk about how you do that.
Yeah, so I started in 2003 just doing all kinds of, you know, switcheroos on stuff. I really got interested in the puzzle piecing back together of cutting up old clothing. And what I found is that it's really hard to market that stuff online because everything is so unique. What I'm doing is I have a made-to-order clothing label. I'm using altered, recycled t-shirts, and I'm practicing zero waste. All the scraps are recycled into new fabric via crazy quilting or woven rugs and tapestries. The reason I chose t-shirts is because it's reused fibers, but there's enough consistency in the fabrics that I can kind of promise more than one product. I can create them in volume. So if there were somebody to be like, I want 10 of these in red, I'm able to reproduce that. Whereas with, you know, one of a kind stuff with found object fabrics, you know, I spend a lot of time being like, okay, let me go out and find this and send you 10 pictures and really trying to negotiate with customers about what they want from afar. So this was a way to sort of streamline that process and still be able to reuse textiles.
Now, as a designer and a clothing maker, is this fun? Is this a fun challenge to, in addition to the sustainable benefits, it's just a cool project?
I love it. Oh, yeah. Every project is different. And I think, you know, like I said, the gear that I've been driven towards now is a lot more alterations based, just at a local level. And I thought, you know, a lot of artists and designers, they're like, I don't like alterations. I hate doing them. And it's definitely a mindset. It's the same goals that you're reaching with people. You're making them feel good. They feel better in their clothing. You're saving that clothing. You're making it, you know, you're keeping it from the trash or the, you know, wherever else it would end up. So I think... I forgot your question, but it's awesome. Yes, I love it. Every day is different. Every project is different. Yeah, they go really fast, and then you get paid because there's already a demand there. Unfortunately, as a producer, you're having to create stuff, and then you don't know when you're going to sell it. So there's more to do there with the marketing end of it.
Well, we'll leave it there, Vanessa. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That was Vanessa Andrew, who joined us from a Milwaukee studio earlier today. Vanessa is a Milwaukee artist, community educator, and clothing designer. She creates clothing and textiles and has her own brand, Madam Chino, which she started in 2003. You can find out more about her and her work at madamchino.com.